right, all right, all right. Good morning, listeners. You're listening to Wellness Wednesday, hosted by the YKHC's Diabetes Prevention and Control Department. My name is Ray Peterson, Outreach Specialist for the Diabetes Department, and I am here with our dental provider, or one of our many dental providers, Keith Brannon, Dr. Keith Brannon. Would you mind introducing yourself to our listeners?
Yeah, I'm Dr. Keith Brannon. I work at YKHC in the dental department, and I've been a dentist for 2 years now. And I spent my first year at OHSU, which is a health system in Portland, Oregon, with their GPR program. It was an advanced education program. So I've seen a lot of really neat dentistry. It's been great.
Mm-hmm. All right. And we're happy to have you here in our little slice of Alaska. So thank you for being here and present on our show today.
Sure.
So with that reveal, you probably already know, this is directed to our listeners, that not only are we going to be talking about a little bit about diabetes today, but also dental and oral health. So if you have any questions or comments regarding today's show, feel free to call us at 543-5985, 543-2756, or 1-800-995-8954. If you don't feel comfortable calling in to the show, don't worry. You can also email your comments or questions to radio@kyuk.org. So to get things rolling, I'm going to talk a little bit about diabetes, and then we'll move on into the dental portion of our show. So, listeners, what exactly is diabetes? So diabetes is a disease that you can get when there's too much sugar in your blood. Over time, this sugar can wear down the blood vessels in your body, your arteries, your heart, and pretty much everywhere that your blood travels to. So those little tiny blood vessels in your eyes, those can get affected over time because it just continues to damage those vessels and arteries. So what are the different types of diabetes? There is gestational, which can develop during pregnancy for women, and this high blood sugar can affect both the mom and the baby. We also have type 1 diabetes, which used to be called juvenile, which mostly affects adolescents or young adults when they're growing up. And then type 2 diabetes is the most common in not only in our area, but the rest of the United States. And then there is prediabetes, where your blood sugar levels are elevated but not high enough to be considered diabetes. So it looks like we have our first caller. Wilson, if you are on the line.
Yeah, Wilson in beautiful downtown Bethel.
Hi, Wilson.
I know there may be a connection between excess drinking and diabetes. So maybe talk a little bit about that. But also, for the past months, I've been trying to get behavioral health, the outreach department, which is probably you guys, Wellness Wednesday, to talk about the issue of suicide or grief and loss. And hopefully that'll happen maybe next week, or I don't know. So this month is Suicide Awareness Month, so I'll sit and listen. Thank you.
Thank you, Wilson. Your input is valuable, and I'll see what we can do to address those concerns of yours. So excess drink or excessive drinking and diabetes. The thing about alcohol is your liver wants to push that out of your system as fast as possible. So it's going to be harder to control your blood sugar or your diabetes if you do have it through, because your sugar wouldn't be it's not seen as the, how do I want to say this, the priority at that point. So your sugar levels might look normal if you've been drinking heavily, but as soon as you stop drinking, your blood sugar levels will start to elevate, and then you'll start seeing those problems with the high blood sugar over time. So, but if you have any questions or concerns about alcohol use and diabetes, you know, you can always make an appointment with your provider or contact the diabetes department, specifically for diabetes, at 543-6133. So moving on, there are risk factors for developing diabetes, but anyone could develop that, and it affects people of all ages and backgrounds. But there are some known risk factors that include diabetes, which is family history, the lack of physical activity, being overweight, and being over the age of 40. A person's race and or ethnicity can also be a risk factor of developing diabetes, and those races or people are the Alaskan Natives, Native Americans, African Americans, Hispanics, Asians, and Pacific Islanders. One of the reasons why we are at a higher risk of developing type 2 diabetes is because carbohydrate and high sugar diets have not been a main source of our ancestors' diet. Our bodies have a harder time using the sugar of the current and modern diet of today. So over time, that overworks our pancreas, and we are not able to produce enough insulin to take care of that sugar. So that leads to us developing type 2 diabetes and prediabetes. So some of the symptoms that are typical for most people when we're talking about high blood sugar levels, some of these may be so mild that they even go unnoticed, but the most common symptoms of diabetes include being very thirsty. This is because your body is trying to get rid of the excess sugar that is in your blood. Blurry vision can also be a symptom of diabetes because that elevated blood sugar levels, as I was mentioning earlier, are affecting the little blood vessels in your eyes and causing a lot more strain than necessary. Extreme fatigue and tiredness is also a symptom of diabetes because when the food that you eat is being broken down into glucose, glucose is supposed to be absorbed by our blood cells to give us energy. But if glucose is not being absorbed by our cells, it's just staying in our bloodstream, we are not getting any of that energy. So our body thinks like, oh man, we just don't have any energy. I'm always tired. So that is one of the reasons why extreme fatigue and tiredness is a symptom of diabetes. Urinating and peeing often is also another symptom because your body's also trying to get rid of the excess amounts of sugar in the blood. And then that also leads into being very thirsty. So you may be drinking more water, so you're trying to get rid of that excess sugar. Additionally, if you find that you're urinating or peeing more often, but you haven't included any other liquids in your current diet, you know, you're drinking the same amount of water or you're drinking the same amount of fluids, but you're urinating more often, that is a sign or a symptom of diabetes because your body is trying to get rid of that excess sugar. Other things are cuts or bruises that are slow to heal because the blood vessels are gunked up with excess amounts of sugar that nutrients and oxygen can't make it to those areas anymore. And the cut that you got that you didn't think too much of, it takes, a month or two to heal, and it's just a simple little cut. And that is something that you should probably go see your provider about, because your body is not healing the way it should be. And then there's also feeling very hungry even when you're eating. Again, that comes into the extreme fatigue and tiredness, because your body is not absorbing the sugar it needs for energy. It keeps saying, like, dude, I need to eat. Please feed me. So, and that's even when you are eating and you're like, why am I always hungry? You know, I just got done eating a 5-course meal, but I'm still starving. That's because your cells are not able to absorb any of that energy, and it's just calling for more. And then the last thing on here is tingling, pain, or numbness in your hands or feet. The reason this is happening, again, like with our eyes, there are tiny little blood vessels and capillaries all over our body, and in our the tingling, pain, or the numbness is because of the sugar gunking up those little tiny things, and it's causing some nerve damage. So that numb, tingling, pain that you may be feeling every now and again, that could be a sign of diabetes. So it looks like I have a caller here. Michael, if you're on the air.
Hello, this is Michael Seal. I used to be like 5.7, and right now I'm up to my HC. My A1C is 5.4. How often should I get tested for diabetes?
All right. That is a very good question, Michael. Typically, for people with diabetes, they should be getting their A1Cs about every 6 to 12 months. But newly diagnosed people, if they've been newly diagnosed with diabetes, should be getting their A1Cs checked every 3 to 6 months, depending on the complications with their health and everything.
When it comes up to 6.5, that's diabetes. But I know my 5.4 must be still good. I don't know. But I don't need any sugar anymore, and enjoy walking. I enjoy walking a lot. Mm-hmm. Days I've been biking around, but mostly I enjoy walking around, and sometimes I do a little bit.
I'm sorry. Continue.
Thank you for your show. Have a nice day.
Thank you, Michael. And good job keeping your A1C levels down. That was actually going to go into the next part of this diabetes information. So Michael mentioned A1C. That is a test that is done in the clinic and in the labs, where it takes the amount of sugar that has been in your blood over the past 3 months. And there are certain percentages that we aim for. So 5.7 is the pre-diabetes range. So that's the time where if you get that number back from your provider, you have some time to change some aspects of your current lifestyle to reduce that number. And Michael hit it right on the nose. He started walking more. You know, he's stopped having a high sugar diet. But one of the best ways to get your A1C down is just by being more active. And that could be as simple as just walking instead of riding a four-wheeler or getting in your car and driving around. So 6.4 to 6.5% is when the diagnosis becomes diabetes, type 2 diabetes, as opposed to pre-diabetes. So that's something that if you are concerned about with your about your current lifestyle, you're like, I really need to make some changes, just make an appointment with your provider. Let them know what you think is going on, and how looking for ways to improve that. They can order a A1C test for you and check your blood sugar levels and all these other neat and fun ways to live a healthier life. And that's also part of why we do Wellness Wednesdays, is just to provide some of these tips or tricks. So other practices to prevent diabetes is, you know, getting enough exercise, being aware of the things that you're putting into your body, i.e. your diet, managing your weight. And this other thing is avoiding tobacco. Tobacco use and diabetes have the same effect. Like, using tobacco will affect your blood vessels, and having diabetes would also be affecting your blood vessels. So if you have diabetes and you use tobacco, you are multiplying the risk of developing all these other health complications over time. Sleep quality and stress can also affect your diabetes or increase your risk of developing diabetes. So just getting enough sleep every night and practicing healthy, stress-relieving activities will, over time, help reduce your risk of developing diabetes and other health complications, because with stress management, you can reduce your heart rate or blood pressure, you know, just by being in a calming, relaxing thing instead of always needing to go, go, go all the time. So with that being said, if any of our callers or, I'm sorry, any of our listeners want to call in to our show, the numbers are 543-5985, 543-2756, or 1-800-995-8954. They can also email us at radio@kyuk.org. So now that we have a little bit of an understanding of diabetes, that's why I have Dr. Keith Brannon. Correct?
Yep, okay. That's me.
Yes. That's why I have you here, sir, to tell us exactly how else can diabetes be affecting us, or does diabetes even have any effect on the mouth?
Oh, well, I mean, diabetes and dental health are very interconnected, actually more so than we ever thought they were. It turns out that there's a correlation between your oral health and your control of your diabetes, and it goes both directions. So if your diabetes is poorly controlled and you have really erratic blood glucose levels and your A1Cs are high, you tend to have a lot more dental problems. And the other way around, if you have really poor oral hygiene, and you're having a hard time keeping your mouth clean, you have a tendency to have more exacerbations of your diabetic issues. And so it really is a two-way street. And, you know, it kind of makes sense because, you know, diabetes, at least type 2, is a very dietary-driven illness and disease. And, you know, we need our teeth to eat, right? So,
yes, we do. Mm-hmm. So that kind of goes on with what I had mentioned earlier about the wounds being slow to heal. Mm-hmm. So is that something you can notice when looking in somebody's, or is that something that people should be on the lookout for if they have diabetes, like any small cuts in their mouth? Or
absolutely. So your mouth is a really good indicator of a lot of different systemic diseases, you know, diabetes in particular, but also other diseases too. For example, if you had a tooth extracted, and your dentist told you that it was going to take you maybe 2 or 3 weeks to heal, and it wound up taking you up to 6 weeks or longer to heal, mm-hmm. That could be an indication that you have something going on with your blood sugar, and it's a good idea to go talk to a doctor about that. you know, extended healing times are a big thing that we look for when someone tells us that they have diabetes. And so, yeah.
Okay. So you had mentioned that oral health problems and diabetes are kind of like interlinked with each other.
Hand in hand.
So what type of complications can happen if somebody has diabetes and the different types of mouth or oral health problems?
Well, the big one that we see with diabetes is periodontal disease. So the term gum disease has it's actually a broad term for lots of different issues that are kind of related. It starts with gingivitis. That's kind of the beginning stages of it, which is really just inflammation of your gums, and everybody can get gingivitis. Everybody can get, you know, any of these diseases, but if you didn't brush today, there's a chance that you have the beginning stages of gingivitis. And if you notice that when you do brush your teeth, they tend to bleed, you have gingivitis, or you're brushing way too hard. the good news is you can stop that by brushing more often. If they're bleeding, if your gums are bleeding, it means you're not brushing quite enough, and you need to do it more often. If you just increase the amount of times you brush every day, you know, maybe you're brushing once a day, maybe you're brushing once a week, you know, bring that number up, brush a little more often, and eventually they won't bleed anymore, and you'll have nice and healthy gums. So with that being said, the more severe form of that gum disease is called periodontitis or periodontal disease. And that's what diabetic patients tend to have a higher risk for. And periodontal disease is more about the attachment of the tooth to the bone and the gums. And it's our teeth are actually kind of like a little bone. And bones connect to other bones through connections called ligaments. And our teeth all have ligaments. It's an interesting looking ligament. It surrounds the tooth. And that ligament can get inflamed and damaged because our body is trying to fight bacteria. So if you don't brush your teeth and you have a bunch of bacteria on your teeth and you don't clean it off, then our body's trying to fight that. And in that war that it's waging against the bacteria, there's a lot of collateral damage that happens. And we accidentally damage our own tissues with our own cells by trying to fight the bacteria. And so we wind up losing attachment. We lose that ligament. Our bone starts to recede away and disappear. And our teeth can get loose. And if it progresses, eventually teeth can fall out or need to be pulled out. And so it's a slow progressing thing. And it can be hard to know in the beginning stages if you have it or not. But if you notice you have a lot of root surfaces of your gums showing, or you notice a lot of loosening of your teeth, there's a chance you have periodontal disease. And you should come and see us, and we can try and help you manage that a little bit better. Other things that can happen with diabetes is you have an increased risk of infections, not just your normal cavity type of infections, because cavities are an infection of the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
But also fungal infections. You can get thrush, which is it's actually called oral candidiasis is the fancy name for it. And it's a fungus that grows inside your mouth, and it can hurt quite a bit. And that's something that you have a higher risk for. And also, you know, the healing issues you mentioned. So there's quite a few things that come along with diabetes that it's really important to come see your dental providers.
Yeah. So the thing with diabetes, so while your body's fighting that infection, mm-hmm. your body is also trying to increase its blood sugar levels too to help fight that infection, mm-hmm. which when you have diabetes, keeping your blood sugar levels in control is pretty much all that you're trying to do. But if you get an infection or get sick,
mm-hmm.
It becomes a lot harder to manage your diabetes. And especially if you weren't managing it at all before, it becomes increasingly harder to keep everything in balance. So I don't want to cut you off, but mm-hmm. we do have a caller. Michael, if you're on the air.
Good morning. It's food causes diabetes, and food can cure diabetes. You eat a lot of berries, onions, mushrooms, seeds, and protein. He says about 4% of protein in those eating. And that's all I have to say. Thank you. Have a nice morning.
All right. Thank you, Michael. I had a hard time hearing what he had said before, but I think he said something along the lines of food that you're eating right now can lead to diabetes, but it is also food that you can eat that can reduce your risk of developing diabetes. Mm-hmm. And he is completely correct with that. Traditionally, the native diet of, a lot of salmon, a lot of healthy fats and, tundra greens and berries from our area, they are very good for our health because the omega fatty threes, and it's just lean protein for us. Mm-hmm. It is definitely something that our ancestors ate a lot of, and it is something we should continue to have a lot of. So the modern diet of drinking a soda with every meal or multiple sodas with every meal is probably not the best idea for you. The thing with diabetes prevention, it's all about moderation, cutting down on sugar, sweetened beverages, and just getting more exercise, and that could just be walking. But mostly it's about eating the right foods for you and your body. So thank you again, Michael, for that insight. We do appreciate it. So what are some of the most prevalent dental problems you see here in our area, both for people with diabetes and the general population?
Cavities. So we're about the cavity rate per person in the Delta is about 5 times the national average. It's because our sugar intake is through the roof. We need to start choosing water and being more mindful of the food that we eat, and using better hygiene practices. And I think there's a lot of temptation to go after sugar because a lot of times our water sources aren't very delicious. Finding ways to solve that problem is going to be a big part of resolving the issue with cavities. But it starts with the choices that you make at home and the decisions you make when you go to the store. If you walk in down the aisle and you see a case of soda on the shelf, just decide to leave it there. Let's not bring it home, because if it's not at home, it's harder for us to get it. And every time you buy fruit juice or energy drinks or soda, you're buying cavities. And I mean, you really are. And it takes a long time to kind of fight back after that. You might not get a cavity that day, but if you finish that whole case, there's a good chance that you got something working up in there. You got a cavity happening. So just be careful about the decisions you make and keep your hygiene practices sound. So
when you mention hygiene practices, what exactly are you talking about?
So brushing twice a day and flossing once a day is kind of the mantra that the dental community has been telling the world. Mm-hmm. And that is true. It's a good thing to do if you can manage to get to that point. But really, if you think about your teeth like they're a tool that you need to maintain and take care of, then it's not all that hard to understand that you might need to just clean them every time you use them. And so we're just hoping we can get people on the habit of brushing their teeth on a daily basis. And then if they decide they want to brush them more from there, that'd be great. But that's another point, though, creating habits. Make it the first thing you do in the morning and the last thing you do before you go to bed. And when it comes to flossing, put your floss out somewhere where you can see it. You know, get it out of the drawer, put it on the table, put it in front of the TV, you know, and just do it when it's convenient and when you're doing something else. You can pair it with another activity, like I guess TV was the example I used. But that way it just naturally happens during your day and you don't have to think about it so much. And it'll just eventually become part of your routine. And in the beginning, it takes some effort. You got to think about it. You say, hey, okay, tomorrow I'm going to make sure I brush my teeth when I wake up. And you wake up and you brush your teeth that day. And then you're like, okay, I'm going to brush them tonight too. And then you brush them that night. And then you have to do it again. And over the next few days, you have to really be mindful of you know, I'm going to brush my teeth. And then you just do it. You won't think about it so much, right? Yeah. So
when it comes to brushing your teeth, does it matter on the type of toothbrush you use?
Yeah. So you can actually do, if you use too hard of bristles and you press too hard while you're brushing, you can actually damage your gums. And so we don't want to do that. You can abrade them away. It's best to use a soft bristled toothbrush and just use light pressure and make sure that you're brushing, you know, all of the surfaces, the tongue side, the cheek side, you know, and the biting surfaces. Just use light pressure. Make sure you're getting down to those gums.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is it important to use toothpaste?
Well, yes. Toothpaste is a good, it kind of acts like soap, right? It'll collect all of that plaque. And you'll notice if you use toothpaste, your teeth feel a lot cleaner. Sometimes that's because they have wax in the toothpaste that is designed to make your teeth feel cleaner. And that's kind of a thing that toothpaste companies do to make them feel better. And some toothpaste has abrasives in it, like some whitening toothpaste has abrasives in it, which isn't really good for your teeth. It kind of abrades away some of the enamel, so it's kind of hard to decide what the best toothpastes are. But really, when it gets down to it, as long as you're getting the bristles of a toothbrush on a tooth,
yeah,
that's what's important. And I want everyone to know that even if you don't have toothpaste, brush with water, just do something about it, right? Get that plaque off of there.
Okay, so talking about plaque now, mm-hmm. You just brought that up. First time we brought up plaque, do you mind expanding on what plaque is?
Yeah, so your teeth are the bacteria. So what's happening in your mouth is you literally have an infection of the teeth. Everyone does, and we're managing this infection every day. And it's kind of gross when you think of it like that. You have these creatures called bacteria living on your teeth, and they eat the sugar we feed them. And then they excrete acid and they build homes. And those homes that they're building, it's really just a structural environment that they're making to live on. They call it a biofilm. It's really gross. and that film actually helps them maintain an environment that they like, because your saliva will wash over them, your spit will wash over them and wash them away unless they have some way to kind of stay in their house. And so they build this weird slimy structure, and they can keep it really acidic and like high acid content right against your teeth, and they love it in the acid. So they just kind of sit there and live. And so that's why we got to get it out of there. We got to destroy all that so that we can wash it away with our own saliva, and we can remineralize our teeth with our saliva. And that plaque can actually calcify, and we call that tartar. And so the minerals in your mouth will harden that plaque and turn it into this really hard, chalky substance that you can't really brush away. And it happens really quickly. And it's the reason you need to see your dentist for cleanings on a regular basis. Because you can brush your teeth all day long, but that plaque's probably going to stay there. That tartar is probably going to stay there, or calculus, right? Okay. And so we have professionals at the office, our hygienists, who are trained to scale all that calculus off of there. And it's really important that you just, you know, make sure that you're coming in to see us every year.
Okay. So you just said every year. I was mm-hmm. about to ask, how often should somebody be seeing a hygienist or a dentist?
So that varies. So for a healthy person that has really good dental hygiene, about yearly is probably enough. But for somebody who tends to get cavities once in a while, if you notice that you've had a few fillings done, then it's probably best that you see a dentist every 6 months or so, about twice a year. Because unfortunately, you got the bug that's causing cavities. And it's a contagious disease, and people don't realize that cavity-causing bacteria, not everybody has it. But the people who do have it need to brush to keep defend off the cavities, and they need to be seeing the dentist more often. And because we're talking about diabetes, diabetic patients have a little bit more often regimens sometimes, and that all depends on how well-controlled they are. So if a diabetic is really well-controlled, then they can generally be seen about every 6 months, like somebody who just tends to get cavities once in a while. And we like to give them fluoride treatments and maintain their bone so they don't get that periodontal disease that they're at high risk for, right? Mm-hmm. But if they're at really low level of control and they have really erratic spikes in their blood glucose, then, like I said, they have a lot more dental issues. So I like to see my diabetic patients about three times a year, and maybe more often if it's getting really severe.
All right.
Yeah.
So that just brought a question to my mind. When somebody has diabetes, should they disclose that information with their hygienist and dentist?
Absolutely. So it's important for your dentist to be aware of all of your medical conditions, because it not only does it impact your teeth, almost everything has some effect on the teeth, but also we need to know what to do if there's some sort of medical emergency that happens in the dental chair, because this is a stressful place to be. I mean, nobody really loves going to the dentist. You're not really getting excited about going to the dentist. It's a pretty stressful place to be, and it's a strange experience for most people, I think. And that can cause a lot of physiological body functions. You can get stressed out, you can have heavy breathing, your heart rate will go up, and like we can have lots of emergencies. People faint, you know. So it's really important for us to know what your medical issues are so that if you have an emergency, we can respond appropriately, because we might confuse one emergency for another depending on your medical history. So, you know, maybe you have a blood glucose issue in the chair, mm-hmm. and I think that you're having you're just fainting. So it's really important, I guess, is what I'm saying, to make sure that your dentist knows everything that's going on.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So going back to the tools that we use to keep our mouths healthy and clean, mm-hmm. You mentioned flossing once a day. I'm assuming at night after you've been eating all day and just trying to get some of those particles out. Does it matter on the type of toothpaste or mouthwash that we use in keeping our mouth healthy?
Well, kind of going back to what I mentioned a little bit earlier, was just getting a toothbrush on right. the teeth is the most important thing. But yeah, lots of toothpaste have different benefits, and they all kind of have different goals. You know, you'll go to the toothpaste aisle and there's hundreds of different toothpaste to choose, and it can be a little overwhelming, right? So toothpaste with fluoride are good for people who want to prevent cavities, because they help us kind of defend against cavities and also helps us remineralize the teeth if they start getting broken down by that acid. Toothpaste with baking soda can neutralize some of the acid on our teeth and kind of turn it into water. It's a basic chemical. When it comes in contact with an acid, it turns into water. It's really a neat process, and it also acts as kind of an abrasive to get the plaque off of your teeth, and it's a little bit more natural substance that people like to lean on, but really, like I said, get the bristles of the toothbrush on the teeth. But then when it comes to mouthwash is a little bit more like, I don't know, you know, if you use mouthwash that's really burns a lot, it can kill the bacteria, and it does that job, but it can also dry you out. So, and dry mouth is not great either. You can get worst cavities if your mouth is dry. And so if you're using mouthwash that causes that to happen, it's a little controversial is what I'm trying to say. I like to recommend to my patients they use alcohol-free mouthwashes so it doesn't dry them out. And I like to focus on ones that have fluoride, but they require a little bit of knowledge on how to use them appropriately. So go and talk to your dentist about how to do it.
All right. Mm-hmm. So expanding on oral hygiene and I guess oral health, when should we start practicing oral hygiene?
Right away. Even a toothless infant needs good oral health. We get our first tooth at around 7 months old, give or take. Some kids actually have it when they're born. They have teeth that can be in the mouth when you're born, but you know, that's not very common. But you get it about 7 months, and then every few months after that, you just keep getting more teeth until you're about 2 years old. And then after that, you get teeth once you turn around 6 years old, you get your first adult teeth. And so we have teeth coming in, and we only get two sets of them, right? And parents need to realize that it's their responsibility to take care of a child's teeth until that child is capable of brushing effectively themselves. Emphasis on the word effectively. Sometimes kids will brush, but they'll just kind of suck on the toothbrush. And they're not really doing anything to get the plaque off of their teeth. It needs to be done well. And if it isn't done well, then they can get cavities. And those cavities turn into infections. And then they have to be seen, you know, in the dental office. And it can be a traumatic experience. Because if you're a little bit too young to cooperate, you know, it forces the dentist into a difficult situation where we have to get this child out of pain. But we have to get them numb somehow. So, you know, there's issues with getting a child numb and feeling a poke. And that child has a traumatic experience because of that. And then they're afraid of the dentist. And so if we can keep them healthy until they're old enough to cooperate with us, that's the goal. And so for caregivers of kids, for parents, make sure you're looking at your kid's teeth every week at least. Just lift the lip and look at their teeth. And if you start seeing white spots or brown spots, come and see the dentist right away. And we like to have our patients come in with their babies so that we can talk to them about proper oral care for children. And we do our first dental visit right around the first tooth, mm-hmm. or no later than a year old, so that we can get them in and we can, you know, get them used to the dentist and having somebody kind of looking in their mouth. And we can teach mom and dad how to brush appropriately. We have lots of neat little tips and tricks about ways that you can get in there and get things clean when kids can kind of be a little bit, you know, combative. So,
all right. So talk about infants and just starting that uh-huh. routine of oral hygiene. What does the – I'm kind of just assuming you have to kind of swab the gums maybe yeah. with the – are there tools or something you can use? Like you put on your finger and you just swab around in there after feeding the baby?
Yeah. So, you know, in the beginning it's more about just getting any excess, you know, milk off of the teeth. And you can do that with a clean, wet washcloth.
Okay.
And that's pretty effective. And then, you know, once you have teeth that are, you know, fully erupted in the mouth, just getting a little bit of a brush on them, it doesn't take very long. You know, if you have four teeth in the mouth, it takes a very short time to brush them, right?
Yeah.
And we have little baby brushes that you can get from our dental department. And they're, you know, easy to hold and they're small so that you can use them on the babies. And as kids get older, we have brushes that are made for you know, younger kids and then adults, right? So there's a progression. And so just being mindful of it and doing something about it every day will help keep those kids from having those infections. And so, yeah.
All right. And I would also assume, you know, keeping kids off of or consuming a lot of sugary beverages.
Yeah. It's remarkable the parallels that we have between tobacco use and sugar consumption. You know, they're both kind of a bad habit. They both have intermediate problems. You know, with sugar, it's cavities, and with tobacco, it's, you know, emphysema or COPD. And then they both result in pretty devastating and life-changing systemic diseases. With tobacco, it's cancer. And with sugar, it's diabetes. But we'll so quickly grab a soda and hand it to our child, but we won't give them a cigarette. It's just an interesting thing to think about. So sugar should never be in a baby bottle, ever. Now, there's sugar in milk, right, which is the reason you want to wipe the teeth down, but never, ever put soda in a baby bottle. It really just sets them up for some big infections and is going to cause a lot of problems. And just limiting the sugar intake of your kids in general just is the best way to keep them from having dental problems. And so, it again, go back to the just keeping it on the shelf and leave it at the store. You don't want to bring it home, because if it's at home, then kids get it, right? They're going to get a hold of it. Sugar, kids love sugar. We all know that. But, you know, mom and dad can be the gateway to that sugar. And, you know, if you do wind up giving your kids juice, that's a really common thing. It can be nutritious, but you need to make sure that day, whenever the kids are getting that sugar, that day you're being very careful about brushing and getting that sugar off of the teeth. So,
how would it be if somebody does decide to have soda or sugar, following up that, or, I mean, soda or juice, following up that beverage with water? Does that help clean up some of the?
Yeah. So that's great. Getting sugar off of the teeth with water is a great thing to do. And I would definitely recommend that as a practice if you're going to have sugar in your mouth. But it doesn't replace the brushing and flossing, right? So sugar, the way sugar works in your mouth is it's not about how much you have, it's about how often you have it. And what I mean is if you sip on a soda all day long and you only finish half of it, but you've been sipping on it all day, that will have much more detrimental effects on your teeth than if you chug the whole soda in one gulp. And I'm not advocating for chugging the soda in a gulp, but I'm just saying that if you keep attacking your teeth with sugar and acid, which is what we're doing when we sip on a soda, then it just can't fight back. And so it takes about 30 minutes, about a half an hour, for our mouth to bring the acid levels back to normal after we take a swig of soda. A half an hour. So in that half hour, that's 30 minutes of breakdown of your teeth and softening of the enamel and beginning cavities. And then you take another sip and it happens again, right? So, you know, if you're going to have soda, just have it at a meal, and brush and don't sip on it all day. And if you can just choose water instead, that would be better all around.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. So kind of using the no teeth in the mouth thing as an infant, if somebody happens to lose all of their teeth, you know, when they're an elder or there's some other issues going on where they need to lose some teeth, do they need to still come to the dentist, even though they do not have any teeth?
Yes. Yes, definitely. You can't get away from us that easy. people with dentures, they often have changes that happen to the bone in their mouth. Your bone is kind of moving, and it's slow, but it changes over time, and you need to have your dentures adjusted over time. Sometimes you need to completely realign the inside of it to make it fit again. Dentures are not a lifetime appliance. They need to be remade after a decade or so, sometimes sooner. So that's an important thing, coming in and having your dentures evaluated for a good fit so that you can eat and talk and smile appropriately, right? But also, we're not just tooth doctors, we're mouth doctors, right? So we're looking for oral cancer, signs that might be happening. We're looking for other infections, like the fungal infection I was talking about. That's really common for people with dentures, because sometimes we don't take them out at night, or we wear them a little bit too long during the day. There's a myriad of things that we're looking for, and it's not just about the teeth, it's about whole mouth health. And so just come and keep getting your exams.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So does tobacco use have an effect on us? And also, segueing to a different thing, mm-hmm. also, you mentioned thrush or things and proper oral care. Is it important to brush the tongue?
Yeah. So we'll just start with that. So okay. The tongue has a lot of little nooks and crannies. It's covered in them, right? And we have an infection happening in our mouth that keeps getting re-inoculated by the bugs on your tongue. And it's not just your tongue. It's definitely a source of a lot of bacteria. And so cleaning your tongue is important to kind of slow down that bacterial growth. It's a really good idea, and it makes your breath smell a lot better. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So, all right. So now that we know that when you do brush your teeth, brush your tongue too, mm-hmm. during the process, and does smoking tobacco and chewing tobacco have an effect on our oral health?
Yeah, quite a bit. It's really devastating to our teeth. It's devastating, and honestly to the tissues. I mentioned my time at the hospital in Oregon at OHSU. And while I was there, I had an opportunity to work with a lot of cancer patients, of oral cancer patients. And tobacco is the cause. It usually is in conjunction with drinking. These patients have a really tough time. There's patients who have had entire sections of their face removed, parts of their jaw gone, and they have to go through weeks of radiation treatment and that can be miserable, And so it's a really difficult thing to go through, and tobacco just isn't worth it. It really isn't. I've seen it firsthand, and it's just not—it's not worth it. For our teeth, we see tobacco having similar issues that diabetes has. It causes increased likelihood of getting cavities. It's increased quite a bit. Increased risk for periodontal disease, periodontitis, just like diabetes. They have almost double the risk of losing teeth with tobacco use. And if you can imagine somebody with diabetes who's also using tobacco and not cleaning their teeth, it's the perfect storm. So at least for oral health it is. So not good.
All right. Do you have any anything else you want to let our listeners know about?
We have some resources at YKHC if you're interested.
Yes.
We have a tobacco cessation program. that can be really helpful. Your dentist may ask you to try and find different sources of nicotine. You know, we understand that quitting cold turkey is pretty unrealistic, and it just needs to be a progressive thing. And if you're going to have a dental procedure, we are. It's really important that you heal properly, and tobacco can stop healing instantly. As soon as you take a drag of that cigarette, the healing seems to just stop. And you know, it's an interesting process, but if we can get our nicotine from a different source than an oral source, that's helpful for dentistry because we can heal a lot better in our mouths. And so we have a resource at YK. Our tobacco cessation office number, it's extension 6312, and the number is 1-800-478-3321. And again, that's extension 6312. And they can help you out with if you are interested in quitting or if you need to get, you know, lozenges or nicotine patches to kind of facilitate that sort of thing. I don't know, did you mention the diabetes line?
Earlier, but I could definitely mention it again. Okay. If you have any questions about diabetes, you could give us a call at 907-543-6133. And we'll be happy to address any concerns or questions you have at that. So, is there a number somebody has to call to make a dentist appointment?
Yes. So we're at 6229 at YK. I don't have my number on me right now.
So 543-6229?
Yes, right.
Okay. Cool. Mm-hmm. Well, that's all we have for the dentists coming in. Thank you so much for your being present on the show, Dr. Brannon. Really appreciate you here, and I trust that our listeners enjoyed the show as well. Before we end, I do have some announcements. We are hosting the 5th annual Spawn of the Dead Zombie Run on October 6th. It's going to be at the YK Fitness Center again. It's going to be from 1 to 3 p.m. So this event, we're going to have a lot of fun activities that are being hosted by a lot of different organizations. We have dental, they're going to be hosting a booth there. We have pharmacy going to be doing, and all the activities are going to be like zombie apocalypse, zombie themed booths. It's going to be so much fun. So dentist is going to be there, pharmacy, YK Lifesavers Fund is going to be there to discuss certain things going on. We also have the Kuskokwim Backwater Approach doing kayak and water safety using the pool starting at 1 p.m. We also have public health, the Red Cross, and other emergency services participants hosting really fun activity booths. So that date, again, is October 6th. It's a Saturday, first week of October. Come join us from 1 to 3 p.m. at the YK Fitness Center. We have the zombie run starting at 2. And you don't have to participate in the run because we have all those other activities going on. That's going to be available throughout the entire day. Well, throughout the 1 to 3 period. So if you have any questions about the zombie run or about the different booths, that will be you can contact the diabetes department at 907-543-6133. And one last thing, we are hosting the Community Activity and Garden Awards. This is available at ykhc.org/services, and it's located within the community health and wellness portion of that page. The Community Activity and Garden Awards allows our communities and organizations within the communities and the YK Delta to apply for funding to host a community activity to reduce the risk of health complications and especially diabetes for our residents here in the YK Delta, and also getting community gardens up and running. Feel free to give us a call if you have any questions on the Community Activity and Garden Awards. Our number is 543-6133. So these are going to be available on a monthly basis now instead of once a year. And the due date for applications is the first of each month, and we notify participants or applicants of their status by the 15th of each month. So within 2 weeks, you'll know if you have gotten funding for your project or not. Again, if you have any questions about that, give us a call, 543-6133. That's all we have today for Wellness Wednesday. Thank you, Dr. Keith Brannon, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Great show. And thank you, listeners. We hope you have a wonderful Wellness Wednesday.